Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations, 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Bible Answers right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Well, it's obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our schools or public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Now, let's go back to the Ten Commandments. Let's go back to the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law, the Ten Commandments, into our federal constitution. That's not separation of church and state. Now, there's still one school left in America that I know of that teaches this entire Mosaic Law of the Ten Commandments and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties for the violation of these laws and the 33 benefits that you receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. So whether you call it the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which is the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call right now, 417-273-4967. Again, that number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, I got another question in here that deals with licensing. Licensing that deals with marriage. Let's see if I've got the information here in front of me. The letter goes something like this. It says, I'm a student at Concordia St. Louis Seminary, and I'll probably get married very soon. And I'm very interested in the subjects that you deal with, but first and foremost, I'm interested in marriage. I'm always apprehensive about starting something new that is life-altering, and the fact that I need a license makes me wary because it seems so unnecessary. I'm interested in your thoughts. This comes from a listener called, or his name is Mark. All right, Mark, I think we can probably do something for you there on the subject matter of marriage. It's lesson number 43 in my tax and status school, so I went over to lesson 43 in tax and status, which has a total of 46 lessons in it, so you're not going to get everything out of tax and status. Had a guy say to me one time, he said, well, I'll just wait and listen to it on the air. At some point in time, I'll get it all. Well, you probably won't, but even if you did, you'd have it so disconnected and spread out over such a long period of time and interconnected with so many other lessons that it wouldn't be of any practical value to you. So I would suggest that you consider going to school to learn more about how to do tax and status. If you don't want to pay the income tax, you don't have to, but you got to stop having income, which means that you got to be, at some point in time, you got to be smart enough to learn how to make a living without income. It's not impossible, it's just difficult. So let's start off here by reading a little section of the laws on marriage. Doing this here for Mark. A guy by the name of Everett Sullivan. Everett Sullivan was a Baptist preacher up in Nebraska back in the 1980s. And he gave a talk. And this Sullivan had been arrested and jailed. He was operating a Baptist school without a license. And Mark, you raised that question. It seems so unnecessary for me to have a license. Well, you got a good point there. If you go to the law dictionary or a legal dictionary, the definition of a license is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or trespass. So when you get a license to marry, it's the prima facie evidence that you intend to break the law. Think about that now. Every one of you who has a license to break the law. In fact, that's why we get a license to practice law, a license to practice medicine, a license to drive an automobile, because it's against the law for you to practice medicine, practice law, or drive an automobile without a license. Because the definition of the license is permission. So you're going to go to somebody to get permission. Permission to do what? To violate somebody else's rights, because you want to create this permission to do something that's otherwise illegal. So you want a license to do something that's illegal. You want a license to do something that's unlawful. You want a license to do something that is a tort. So it's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or you want to trespass upon somebody's rights. That's why you get a license. Now, Dr. Sullivan, after he had been to jail, and when he got out, he was out talking to another congregation. Here's what he said. Dr. Everett Sullivan, a Baptist pastor, has gained renown as the Nebraska preacher who went to jail rather than license his school. In a recent talk to a Missouri congregation, here's what he said. Quote, now many people have asked me, how did they get you in jail? And let me say this, and it may shock you, but I personally was never charged with anything. I've never been charged with breaking the law. I've never been charged with committing a crime. I've never even had a trial. So you may ask me again, how in the world did they get you in jail? Well, I may not know very much about your church, and I may hit you here, but I'm finding that this is one of the things that God wants me to tell churches. You see, they sued the corporation. Now, I don't know if your church is incorporated or not, but if it is, then you better listen up. When a church incorporates, it becomes a creature of the state, and its officers become agents of the state, and the agents and the officers and the corporation have no constitutional rights. And by the way, if you take a license for anything, you lose your constitutional right for the thing that you took your license out for. All right, now you must have some kind of right involved in marriage, and then when you get a license, you're going to substitute the license for your right. Well, what rights do you have in marriage? And why would you want a license to circumvent your rights? Doesn't make any sense. Everybody does it, but then, you know, that's the way people are, aren't they? I mean, everybody goes out and does it. Everybody eats pig. That doesn't make it good for you. Everybody drinks Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola. Doesn't make it good for you, but it's something that everybody does. And we feel comfortable doing what everybody else around us is doing. It's kind of like the herd instinct, isn't it? He goes on to say, now I'm going to give you a shocker, and I don't like to do these things because it makes me look so ridiculous. But you see, we've learned something. For 6 years, we went down to the legislature, and we said to the legislature, give us some relief. Now I'm glad tonight that I can stand here before you and say they didn't give us the relief. And I'm glad that they didn't, because the Constitution says that it's an area that they shouldn't be involved in the first place. But as we testified before the committee, the parents would testify and they'd weep and they'd say, these are our children. God gave us these children and we're responsible for them, as they'd look across the table at those senators. Well, Senator Pfeiffer, who's a young man about 38 years old, who's an attorney and a legislator, he sits on the subcommittee on education. And as these parents were testifying, Senator Pfeiffer looked back across the table and he said to this one mother who had just completed her testimony, he said, quote, do you have a state marriage license? And she said, yes, I do. And Senator Pfeiffer said, quote, hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege from the state and that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state? Unquote. So one of the first rights that you want to give up with a marriage license is ownership of your children under the doctrine of parens patriae. The second right that you want to give up is your right to ownership or possession of your wife or your husband, which is why we have thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not commit adultery, two laws that protect marriage, two laws that protect your property rights in your husband, ladies, and your property rights in your children. So let me tell you right now that no woman on this planet Earth has ever owned their child. No woman on planet Earth is ever going to own a child. There's only two possible owners. The husband and father can own the child, or the state can own the child. It's either the state or the husband, state or the father. Now, under American law, you fathers can no longer own your children, nor can you have a property right or interest in your wife, which is what you had under the Mosaic law. Of course, we decided that that Mosaic law was a bad law, and so we repealed that. We got rid of that garbage, and we've gotten something that's really good. We got health, education, and welfare laws. We've got the doctrine of parens patriae to take the place of property in family and in children. So Sullivan here has hit the nail on the head. Now, Senator Peter Hoagland was on a television show with me. Now, remember, this is This is Everett Sullivan, the pastor. He was on a television show with me debating the issue, and what he said to me on that show was repeated by the head of the state PTA and by the executive director of the state school board association and by the executive director of the teachers union. Four people said the same thing. We were on Channel 6, live at 5. So the moderator looked over at me and said, Pastor Sullivan, only 8 states in the union require licensed schools and certified teachers, so it surely must not be that important of an issue. And I said, you're right, and there's a way to solve the problem. National standardized testing. We had our students tested by the state's own experts. We're a year ahead of the public schools and 2.5 years ahead of the Omaha public schools. We were so good that the judge wouldn't even let us put it in the record, unquote. Well, the moderator looked over at Senator Hoagland and said, well, Senator, why is Nebraska making such a big deal out of this? And Senator Hoagland said this. He said, now, the reason that we're making a big deal out of this is because fundamental Bible-believing Christians do not have a right to educate children in their doctrine. Because in the year 2000, America is going to be part of the one-world socialist order, and their children will not fit in. Now, this was a speech given by Everett Sullivan in March of 1983, 20 years ago. Now, marriage licenses did not begin back in the 1980s. They began in the United States in 1876 in Illinois under the 14th Amendment. Illinois, 1876. By 1900, marriage licenses were still uncommon in the United States. By 1920, they were common. Today, they're practically so common, they're practically unheard of for somebody to marry without a marriage license. And it brings the state into a three-party limited general partnership. So let me show you how that works. Three-party limited general partnership. Let's take a look at the student section, Common Law Marriages in Tennessee, and listen to this. Marriage has been defined by the Tennessee Supreme Court as follows. It, marriage, is something more than a contract. It is rather to be deemed an institute or institution of society. It is founded upon the consent and the contract of the parties, and in this view it has some peculiarities in its nature, its character, its operation, and the extent of obligation that are different from what belong to ordinary contracts. So let me pause right there. The marriage license is a contract. It's a contract between three parties, the boy, the girl, and the state. And this is not an ordinary contract, boys and girls. It's an extraordinary contract. So when you went down to get your marriage license, did anybody explain to you that this is an extraordinary contract? You see, when people go down to get a marriage license, they're not thinking about business and contracts. They're both in heat. They're only thinking about sex. Not really a very good basis for a contract, now, is it? Unlike other contracts, yet the marriage license is indissoluble between the parties. When consummated according to law, it is of perpetual obligation, and it cannot be renounced at the will of either or both parties. All right, I'm going to pause right there. When you make this contract, the state says to you, you cannot rescind this contract. It's of perpetual obligation. Well, you know, that's the exact opposite from the Bible. You see, a marriage is dissolvable under the law of God. It's indissoluble under the laws of the state. Over here in Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4, listen to this. When a man has taken a wife and married her, and it comes to pass that she finds no favor in his eyes because he's found some uncleanness in her, that's called a cause for divorce, then let him write her a bill of divorcement and give it into her hand and send her out of his house. And when she's departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. And if the latter husband hates her and writes her a bill of divorcement and gives it in her hand and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies, which took her to be his wife, her former husband, which sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife. After that, she is defiled. After she's remarried and had sexual relations, she can never go back to a previous husband. For that is an abomination before the Eternal, and you shall not cause the land to sin, which the Lord your God gives you for an inheritance. So don't get mad at me now. I didn't write Matthew 24, 1 through 4. And I didn't write the student section of the Tennessee Law Review. I'm just reporting to you what it is that you asked for, Mark. You said, I want to know what's the law on marriage. Well, there's a very distinct, articulable distinction between civil law marriage under the Roman civil law and marriage under the Mosaic law, the law of God. Now, up until about 1900, we Americans practiced the Mosaic law. We practiced patriarchal family in America. We did not have marriage licenses. Fathers owned their children. Fathers had a property right in their wives and wives in their husbands. But we decided that was wrong, and we're going to change that. We're going to change that. We're not going to have thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not commit adultery. And so today, when you send children to public school to educate them, but they don't know anything about marriage, this young fellow Mark here, he more than likely has a high school diploma. Now he's enrolled in college, or he's about to go to Concordia, St. Louis Seminary. And when you go to seminary, they're not going to teach you about marriage under the law of Moses. They'll tell you that you probably, I don't know positively here, but I would guess that they're going to tell you that marriage is banned. Why, you can't get divorced. I mean, not marriage is banned, but divorce is banned. Why, you can't get divorced. Going on here, it, that is marriage, this is reading now from the Common Law Marriage in Tennessee student section. It continues to exist until a dissolution is pronounced either by the death of one of the parties or by a divorce. So the state can give you a divorce, but the boy and the girl cannot divorce. Only the state, only your guardian can grant you a divorce. Are you really sure that you want to enter into a three-party limited general partnership with the state? Or would you rather have a contract between the boy and the girl, or would you rather have a contract between the boy and the girl's father? You know, there's three forms of marriage: common law, civil law, and patriarchal. Did anybody ever tell you that? No, you go to public school, they only tell you about civil law marriage. Nobody tells you about common law marriage, and if they do, they'll say, oh, that's pretty wicked and evil, you know, that's shacking up, that's bad. And the word patriarchal marriage you probably never heard. The rights and duties growing out of marriage are not left to the option or the agreement of the parties. That's the boy and the girl. The boy and the girl have no input into the law, no input into the duties, responsibilities, or obligations of marriage. That's done by the state. But to some extent, those are matters of municipal regulation over which the will of the parties can have no control. Are you really sure that you want to enter into a state marriage over which you and your wife have no control? Let me ask you this, Mark. How would you like to enter into a contract with George Gordon? You bring your bride-to-be over, and I'll write up a contract, and I'll put a clause in the contract that says, this contract can be altered, reformed, or amended by George Gordon, but this contract cannot be altered, reformed, or amended by the parties hereto. How would you like to sign a contract like that with me? Now, I'm sure, and I've been doing this for a lot of years, I'm sure that you'd say, well, that's crazy. Well, why is it crazy, Mark, not to sign a contract with me to give me those kinds of lopsided powers, but you sign those kinds of contracts with the state of Missouri? And it doesn't seem to be crazy, does it? I guess if everybody's crazy and everybody gets a marriage license, that's sanity. But if one guy goes out and enters into a common law marriage, or one guy goes out and he enters into a patriarchal marriage, those are lunatic fringers. I'm not quite sure that I see the logic in that. Do you, Mark? Now, they go on to say that it is an institution which lies at the very foundation of all social order. Social order. All socialist order is predicated upon these state-issued marriage license marriages. And morality. Did you hear that? It is an institution which lies at the very foundation of all social order and morality. Now, here's the state. You know, like the United States of America. Goes in and seizes Mustang Ranch, which is a whorehouse in Nevada. They operate a whorehouse for 16 months and then sell the whorehouse to some new buyer for taxes. See, the old owner didn't pay his taxes, so the IRS, that is the United States government, goes in, takes over a whorehouse, runs it for 16 months, takes the profits, and then sells it and makes a profit to settle the tax debt. And are you telling me that we're to go to the United States of America so that we can learn morality? Mark? Mark, wake up now. Smell the coffee. Now, here's the Supreme Court of Tennessee telling me that morality comes from the civil law state, and it constitutes the chief cornerstone of the whole structure of civilized society. All right, now they go on to say that on another occasion, our Supreme Court, speaking of a common law marriage, said, quote, no particular form was required to be observed by the parties entering into it. It is a simple agreement by a man and woman that they would live together as a man and wife, and it constitutes a valid marriage. So a valid marriage tells us, or the Supreme Court of Tennessee tells us, that a valid marriage is a common law marriage. A valid marriage would be a marriage by the state with a marriage license. And they go on to explain these old common law marriages. It says, this common law form, which existed in England and in some of the states in the earlier development of our nation, due to the vast space, difficult traveling facilities, and the scarcity of squires, has been abrogated in many states today, including Tennessee, by statute. So the state of Tennessee, that is the lawmakers of Tennessee, abrogated the common law marriage by statute. They just outlawed it. It's kind of like throwing the Bible out of public schools. We just outlaw it. We just create a new doctrine here called separation of church and state. The statutes dealing with this subject, according to Vernier, fall into five classes. Here's what they are. Those that specifically validate common law marriages, those that set out laws requiring a definite procedure to be followed to be married, but then say nothing about common law marriages. Third, those that specifically declare common law marriages invalid. Fourth, those that may that say that some technicality in the performance of the requirements will not invalidate the marriage. And fifth, those that have been construed by the courts to be mandatory, thereby invalidating such marriages. Tennessee is placed in this last category by all of the authorities. Our statutes require that a license must issue from the county in which the female resides or where the marriage is solemnized. The parties must declare in the presence of a minister or an officer that they accept each other as a man and wife. The parties must be of a certain age. A recital of a performance of the ceremony must be endorsed on the back of the license, and the license must be returned to the county of origin. Well, let's see. Back in the olden days, you used to go to the girl's father and ask the girl's father if you could marry the girl. We don't do that anymore, but it used to be. Why did we do that? Well, because the female is the property of the father. And when he walks down the aisle with his daughter, he gives his daughter to the groom. Have you ever gone to a wedding and seen somebody walk down the aisle with the groom on his arm and then give the groom to the bride? Where do these customs come from? What do they mean? Why did we change them? When did we change them? How were they changed? What's the purpose in making these changes? How do these changes impact upon you, Mark? How do they impact upon your wife or your children in the future? You know, these are pretty serious questions, aren't they? These are pretty profound concepts. You know, if you've got a mind left to think with. Well, hang on, we got to take a break here. We'll come back and we'll take a look at marriage, civil, patriarchal, and common when we return right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. We're talking about the Bible answers your questions when we return. Well, how many laws did Moses give us in the Mosaic Code, and how many laws has the state and federal government given us in our secular government? Well, Moses gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. The state at last count has given us 2.5 million laws. That's right, 2.5 million laws. Peter said that we ought to obey God rather than men. And he said that in Acts 5, verse 29, and Congress of the United States said that we ought to voluntarily apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of families, individuals, and societies. And they said that in Public Law 97-280. Our Supreme Court has said that there is a higher loyalty than loyalty to this country. That is, loyalty to God. And they said that in Seeger versus United States. You know, every authority is in agreement. The Congress, the Supreme Court, and God Almighty Himself all agree that the Scriptures are the final authority on law. Now, to learn these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and how to use the Mosaic Law against government intrusion into your God-given rights is a right, a duty, and an obligation that we owe to ourselves, to our families, and to our society. Now, here at the law school, we teach all 759 of these statutes, judgments, and commandments, along with the penalties for the violation of these laws. Now, why don't you make it a point to regain your First Amendment right to free exercise this year, and then remember that the First Amendment is a gateway to the Second and to your whole Bill of Rights. Now, the law of God may be old, but it's not old-fashioned, and it's very relevant to our lives and to our rights today. Now, to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call right now to order yours. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And remember, the Mosaic Law is available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct. 417-273-4967. Okay, we're answering a question here from Mark concerning marriage license. Should I get one? I don't know. I don't know whether you should get one or not. I didn't get one. I discovered that was bad for me. My wife and I thought that over, and we said, you know, I think that the two of us would be better served to have a marriage without a state license. I know that sounds very politically incorrect, but people who are incompetent and incapable of conducting a marriage without state guidance probably need a marriage license. I wouldn't deny that. And I wouldn't tell somebody not to get a state marriage license. I mean, after all, you know better than I whether or not you're competent. I wouldn't tell somebody not to open a bank account. I don't know if you're competent and capable of handling your own money or not. Maybe you need a guardian to handle your money. It's just that I grew up and I got to a point in life where I said, you know, I think that I'm a big boy now and I could probably handle my own money. And I haven't had a bank account since. And then I grew up and I got to be a big boy and I said, gee, I think I could handle marriage all by myself. So I went to the Bible and I found out what the law, statutes, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices of the Mosaic Law were. And I said, gee, I think I could handle that. And I went to my wife and I said, well, do you think you can handle that? And she said, yeah. I said, well, let's get married and let's do it of and by ourselves without the state. And she said, yeah, I think that's a good idea. to protect our property rights in our children, our property rights in our property. For instance, when two people get married, did you know that there's an inheritance tax that's connected with the marriage license? Think about it. You see, Bert and Betty got married, and they lived their lives, and Bert and Betty gathered a lot of toys, you know, stocks and bonds and all kinds of things. And then one day old Bert died, and Betty said, oh, good, I get all the toys. And the state comes in, and they say, no, Betty, buy me out. And did you know the inheritance tax just runs 28% to 35%? 28% to 35%. Gee, I woke up one day and I said, you know, I think I could live my whole life through without giving a third of everything that I create and produce to the state when I die. And my wife, Jackie, thought, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Why should we give that to the state in inheritance tax? Because we want to contract with the state for these benefits. And then there's the ownership of the children that come into play. Now, not only is there a marriage license, there's also a birth certificate that comes in here. And so the state not only wants you to get a marriage license so that the state can have a one-third interest in the children, they then want you to get a birth certificate and cede to the state or give to the state 100% of the child. And the state comes in and takes 2.5 million children out of their homes every year. Makes all the sense in the world. Under the doctrine of parens patriae, which is what you're signing up for with a marriage license and birth certificate, the state has a 100% interest in the child. Parens patriae. P-A-R-E-N-S-P-A-T-R-I. Parens patriae. Or A. Maybe it's P-A-T-R-A-I. I don't have the book here in front of me. That's right. The doctrine of parens patriae vests the state with the ownership of the child, and you, the boy and the girl, who produce the child, the state's sterile, they don't produce any babies. But in order to get these babies to fight in their wars in Iraq and Vietnam, they have to have some legal interest, and they get that legal interest when the baby is born. Now, the state doesn't want to put braces on this baby's teeth and raise this baby. They don't want to do that. They want you to do that and pay all the costs, including the cost of education, called free public education, free public schools. Nothing free about them. You pay for those with your taxes. But they're called free public schools. I'm not quite sure why we believe that they're free when they cost a lot of money. In fact, it costs $6,000 a year to educate a child in public school. It costs under $600 to educate that child in your home school. But again, I'm not here to criticize. I'm just here to tell you that that's where it's at, and people call those free public education schools. All right, now, here's a letter from the Department of Public Health from Shasta County, California, written to one of my students. It says, as I understand it, you gave birth to twin girls on July 30th and 31st, 1985 at Mercy Medical Center in Redding, California. I also understand from the hospital that you did not desire to register the birth of your girls with them at this time. So I'm writing to inform you of information that you may be unaware of. According to state regulations, if you do not register your daughter's birth within the first year of their delivery, they would then have to be registered on a delayed registration of birth form, and the cost would be at this time $15. Now, considering the fact that you delivered in a hospital and had a physician in attendance, this would probably be of no consequence or trouble for you now. But in later years, this may be a problem for your daughters. And I'm sure you're aware of the utmost importance in having a birth certificate as soon as possible. All right, boys and girls, listen to that. This is a letter from the Department of Social Services in California. It says, I'm sure that you're aware of the utmost importance in having a birth certificate as soon as possible. All right, now you're listening to me right now. Can you tell me right now, can you give me one good reason why you should have a birth certificate as soon as possible? Think about it now. Can you come up with just one good reason why you should have a birth certificate? Does it prove that you were born? Does it prove nationality or citizenship? Does a birth certificate do something for you? Now, in 20 years, the hospital records could have been destroyed and your physician may not be available to help you or your girls. Let me pause right here. Birth certificates first came into usage in the United States after the 14th Amendment, around 1876 with marriage licenses, and I think it was 1872 or 73 with birth certificates, again, started in Illinois. By 1900, birth certificates were not common. By 1920, they were. Now, let's think back a little bit. Prior to 1850, were people being born in the United States? Did they have birth certificates? Were they able to live their lives from birth to death without any impairment for lack of a birth certificate? Now, my great-great-granddaddy, you know, he got married, he had a wife, and he didn't have a marriage license. Did that impair my birth? Did that impair my heritage? Did that impair me in some way? Am I a bastard because my great-great-granddaddy didn't have a marriage license? A marriage license, now remember, is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or trespass. My great-granddad, he didn't have a problem with a marriage license because he wasn't breaking any laws. So what law is it that you want to violate, Mark, for which you need a marriage license? The marriage license gives you permission to break a law. What law do you want to violate? Well, there's only two prohibitions in marriage contained in the Bible. Two prohibitions. Marrying somebody outside of your race, called miscegenation, is a violation of the law of God, for which the state comes along and says, gosh, we'll give you a marriage license. We will license you to break that law, just like we do with doctors. In Exodus 15, verse 26, God says, I'm your healer. The state comes along and says, oh, no. God's not our healer. Marcus Welby, MD, and Mercy Medical Center is our healer. That way you can go down to Flo's Warehouse, and if you get a dose of clap, you can go down to the doctor who will give you some sulfa drugs or penicillin and take the penalty of your sin away. He will forgive you your sin. Doctors offer forgiveness of sin. Hospitals are the temples that you go to obtain forgiveness of sin. Now, that's called idolatry. It's prohibited by the first commandment. The state comes along and licenses doctors so that they can engage in that kind of criminal activity. Every licensed profession is a criminal activity. And that's because the very definition of a license is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or trespass. Now, Linda Allen, the social services worker, concludes the letter by saying, consider the fact that in order to be registered for school, apply for a marriage license, grants or scholarships in school, the state of California requires a certified copy of a birth certificate. The federal government requires a certified copy of a birth certificate when applying for military service, passports, or a social security card. All of the things that you don't want, can't use, shouldn't have, and that violate the law of God, you have to have a birth certificate to obtain. If you want the mark of the beast, you have to have a social security card. If you want a passport to give you a national identity, then you have to have a birth certificate. If you want to serve in the military, you have to have a birth certificate. Service in the military is a violation of the law of God. Violates the war statutes. And when you get a passport, you're submitting to a census or national identification, which violates the census law in the scripture. Social Security violates strict liability because it's limited liability. And the state of California says, well, if you want a birth certificate, you have to have a birth certificate if you want to get a scholarship in school or if you want to be registered for school. Wait a minute. It's against the law to send your children to public school. God himself told you to educate your children in this law. And of course, we don't want to educate our children in the Ten Commandments or the law of God or the Bible. We want to educate our children in the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto and free sex and sex education in school. We don't want morality and thou shalt not commit adultery. Don't practice fornication. We don't want to teach our children that. And so we have fixed God's mistake. We've come up with a system where we can elect our own representatives. We can have our own king to rule over us and to make our laws for us so that we don't have to practice these onerous laws of God. Now, when you get a marriage license and you have children, you have to have a birth certificate, and this birth certificate is recorded in your state, and a copy is sent to the Department of Commerce. So I'm looking at one right here, United States of America, Department of Commerce, Bureau of the Census. Washington, D.C. Notification of birth registration. This is a notification of birth registration on April 23rd, 1939, in Wolf Point, Montana. Wolf Point, Montana, with the name of the father and the name of the mother. Now, under a case that came out of California back in 1943 called Edwards versus California, this very issue was raised in the U.S. Supreme Court. See, a guy by the name of Edwards was arrested and prosecuted in California because he applied for welfare benefits there. And the California statute prohibited people from coming from other countries or other states and applying for welfare benefits in California. The case wound its way up through the Supreme Court, and the court divided 5-4, 5-4, split decision, 1943, right after Social Security and welfare came into vogue in 1935. Now, this is 8 years later, 8 years later, 1943. And Justice Douglas, in a dissenting opinion, said, you know, we've reached the right conclusion for all of the wrong reasons. You see, Edwards had left Texas, moved to California to get higher welfare benefits. The state of California says you can't do that. So the court came out in Edwards and they said, wait a minute, this is an unlawful burden on the Commerce Clause of the federal Constitution. And that's because Edwards is an article in commerce that was created by a Social Security number. And the dissenting opinion, one of the dissenting opinions, came from Justice William O. Douglas, who said, this is a violation of Magna Carta. He has a right to travel, and he has a right to travel from Texas to California or any other place that he wants to. And the Supreme Court said, well, yeah, he has a right to remove from Texas to California, but not under Magna Carta. He has it under the Commerce Clause. Very important distinction. One is based upon rights of a free man, and the other is based upon a privilege granted by the state under Social Security. Now, there's the story on birth certificates. Now, here's an Idaho application for birth certificate. And it says in the middle of the page here, it says, please note that the inclusion of the parent social security number is required as a part of Public Law 100-485. This information is strictly confidential and may be released to the Idaho Child Support Agency if an official child support action regarding this child has been initiated. Marriage licenses, birth certificates, and social security numbers are part and parcel with this New World Order and this whole concept of the mark of the beast. You give your child to the state, pass your seed through the fire to Moloch, which violates the statute in Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5. See, in ancient times, you used to take one of your children, one child, and sacrifice that child to Moloch, throw him into the volcano. Take a virgin up to the lip of the volcano and throw him in. Today, we have refined that. We no longer take our child, one child, out of four, five, or six, or however many we have, and sacrifice them to the gods. We give all of our children to our God, the United States of America, or California, or Missouri, by passing our seed through the fire to Moloch. Under the doctrine of parens patriae, we give our children, all of them, to the state. And then we raise them and support them so that the state can come in and take them for cannon fodder in Iraq and Vietnam. Now, isn't that just real special? And if you'll go back to 1 Samuel chapter 8, remember those 22 verses? God told you that the king is going to take your sons and your daughters for confectionaries, for his service. He's going to take your tithe and use it for the military-industrial complex. 1 Samuel chapter 8. All right, now, I had a student, his name is Randall, and here's a letter from the Department of Social Services. Here's the letter that just sends chills of terror down the spines of mothers and fathers across America, probably around the world, but at least here in the United States. Here's the letter. It says, this is to inform you that there has been a complaint filed with the Children's Protective Services stating that your son Robert is not attending school because you have not enrolled him and do not choose to have him attend. Now, I contacted the Sturgis Public Schools and found that Robert was not enrolled and that you had been contacted about this matter, and I'm told that you reported that Robert is enrolled in another school, but that you refused to state what that school was. Now, please be informed that Michigan law requires that children 6 years and older must receive an education in an accredited program. It is your right to select the program. I want to emphasize that. It is your right to select the program, but it must meet the requirements of the law. If you refuse to comply with the law, you may be subject to prosecution or to charges of child neglect. Now, I attempted recently to visit you at your home to discuss this matter, but I didn't find anyone home. So please contact me by phone or letter to let me know if this or if the above information is incorrect and to verify your son's attendance in an approved program. If you have questions about your legal responsibilities or your choices, I'll be happy to discuss these with you. Please contact the Children's Protective Services Unit at 467-6311 by Friday, October the 24th, to verify Robert's attendance or to set up an appointment to discuss the matter. If we do not hear from you by that date, we will initiate legal action. Signed, Sherry Salmonson, DFS. Now, why is the state concerned about this man, Randall's child, being in public school? Well, you see, every child that's enrolled in public school is worth, I think, if I remember right, $28 a day. $28 a day. Let's just check that out. Today, that was in 1986. They're worth $6,300 a day, divided by 180 is $35 a day today. Every child in public school is worth $35 a day. So, that's reason number one. But there's a more important reason. You see, that child belongs to the state of Michigan, if in fact these people have a marriage license and a birth certificate for the child and passed their seed through the fire to Moloch, gave their child to the state. Now, this letter was written on October the 20th, 1986. Now, Randy wrote a couple of letters back, and he pointed out that the child doesn't have a birth certificate and that he and his wife do not have a marriage license. Now, that isn't very politically correct, is it? And less than a month later, on November the 13th, 3 weeks later, we get one sentence out of Sherry Salmonson. Here's what she said 3 weeks later after Randy sent her a letter. And he said, upon a review of your case, the St. Joseph County Department of Social Services has determined that we will not be proceeding with our investigation. Sincerely, Sherry Salmonson. What changed in 3 weeks? The child doesn't belong to the state. The child belongs to Randy. That's the difference. This guy, Randy, seemed to believe that he was competent and capable of conducting his own marriage. without the aid of the state, that he was competent and capable of educating his own child in his own home school. Now, there's three ways to educate a child. Every state in the union recognizes these three ways. You can send them to parochial school, you know, a Catholic school, or you can send them to public school, or you can educate them at home. The choice is yours. Remember, she didn't lie to these people. She said, you know, it's your right to select the program, public school, home school, but you got to select some program. And that comports with compulsory education laws. Did you know that? Did you know that God Almighty requires that you educate your child? Compulsory education isn't something dreamed up by the Roosevelt administration in 1937. It came right out of the law of Moses, God himself. Seven statutes require that you educate your child. God requires that you educate your child to the law of Moses contained in the scripture. Americans used to do that. See, Americans used to learn to read. They taught their children to read out of the Bible. Crazy, wasn't it? Abraham Lincoln learned how to read from the Bible. We used to send our children to school in the church 5 days a week, and then we held church on Sunday. Remember? That church building didn't sit empty 6 days a week. It was used 5 days a week for school. That's for people that wanted to educate their children in their church schools. That's the place where our founding fathers received their education. They got it from the church. They didn't practice separation of church and state, boys and girls. That's a communist ideology. Separation of church and state is the manifestation of the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Free education for all children in public school, which, by the way, is anything but free. Well, I'm just about out of time, so I'm going to have to cut it off here, and we'll take it up tomorrow night, same time, same station, right here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we'll talk a little more about this thing of the marriage license. Should you have one? I don't know. I don't tell people that they should or shouldn't have a marriage license. Education is the process by which we give you information. God does not indoctrinate you. He gives you the evidence and the information, and then you decide. You choose whether or not you want to do it. I know it's a wild new concept. All right, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. You've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-sectarian, non-profit law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, that's it. I'm out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.